imagination, and it's a sin. The gods, the freaks, the fraud, they're messing with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out.
Move to the music, play that fucking music. Move it to the music, yeah. Move to my music, play that fucking music. Live through my music, yeah. Now get the codes, the drugs, to my generation, I'll take the fall. The saints, across the nation, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Multimedia Men. This is our special WWE podcast episode. I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm with Tom Nix from the podcast The Smart Marks. Hi, Tom.
What up?
And you're coming in from Oklahoma, right?
Coming in from Oklahoma City, sir.
Sweet. And we're with Mike Pertil from Los Angeles.
Hey, what's going on? Huntington Beach, but, you know, close enough.
It's close enough. I'm going to ask you guys, I'll start with you, Tom. What is your favorite WWE moment or match?
I've got a ton of them that I could say, but one of the first memories or one of my first matches that I remember legitimately having a markout moment for. Now, to put this in perspective, I've only really been a wrestling fan since the very early 2000s. The first Raw that I actually ever watched was the night that Triple H married Stephanie McMahon at the Vegas church while she was passed out. so that was the very, very first Raw I ever watched, and I just turned it on randomly to kind of check it out, and that was the storyline that was going on. And I've been kind of watching it more or less consistently ever since. So really, I've only got about 15 years of history with wrestling personally, where a lot of people my age, and I'm in my early 30s, are kind of had been like lifelong fans since the 80s.
Yeah.
So my first big markout moment, ever since I really knew about him, I have been a massive, 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 massive Chris Jericho fan. And still, I think he's my favorite wrestler of all time.
Y2J.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best. I hope he comes back for at least a couple months. But one of the very first markout moments I remember have is I would drive to my friend's house every Monday to watch Raw, and sometimes every Friday to watch SmackDown, because my parents never, ever had anything more than basic cable. And when I say basic, I mean like 13 channels basic. So I couldn't even watch Raw in my own house. I always had to drive about 20 minutes away to my friend's parents' house to watch wrestling with him.
Yeah.
And my favorite moment, aka first markout moment, was I want to say it was in May of 2001, and it was when Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit, who were two of my favorite wrestlers, probably one of my top two favorite wrestlers, had the tag team match against the two-man power trip, Triple H and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, yeah.
This was the night that we would later learn was the night that Triple H tore his quad. And also probably the night that Triple H stopped being a good wrestler. But when Jericho and Benoit won those tag team titles, it was the first, I guess, legitimate, I guess, putting these guys over moment. Like, yeah, Jericho had the title win situation in 2000 that got reversed within a couple hours and then stricken for the records, so he never did it. And he kind of, like, he had certainly won championships in his time, but it was always against people like X-Pac or that kind of stuff. So when he and Benoit, who were kind of like, really, they were the Daniel Bryans of 2000, when they went over clean over two of the biggest names in wrestling and won the tag team championships, it was mind-blowing for me and a huge, like, just, this is the greatest thing in history. I love wrestling and I love being a fan of wrestling. Because it was a great storyline payoff. It was actually a very, very good match. Even after Triple H tore his quad, I mean, the dude still soldiered on and finished the match.
Yeah, he did. I remember that.
And carried it off as best as he could. And it was a good match on top of it. Like I said, that was really, for me, that was the moment where I kind of was like, wow, you know, the people who write this like the same people I like. And that's freaking amazing. And that's really kind of going to be, it may not be my favorite moment ever in WWE history because there's just too many, but that one still sticks out in my memory as one of the first solidifying, I love this sport moments. And that's probably going to stick with me for a very long time.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember Triple H finishing that match, and you literally, when he was carried off, you could see his muscle hanging there.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was, you kind of knew that something was up to a certain extent because, you know, like, Jericho did the Walls of Jericho on the announce table, and you could tell that it wasn't, you know, pulled back the way it normally would have been, and it wasn't quite as good-looking as it should have been, but, I mean, yeah, you're holding on to a dislocated muscle at that point, so it's legitimately amazing that Triple H was able to
do that.
Just finish a match, period, with his quad being torn. And like I said, we probably won't talk about it, but Triple H probably from like the late 90s up until that moment was probably more or less pound for pound the greatest wrestler in the world. Like, he had amazing matches, amazing psychology, was amazing on the mic. He had that the entrance where he would have the multicolored lights going on him. He would spit the water and he looked like a freaking beast out of hell. It was amazing.
It was good.
He just had everything all in one, and then, you know, I mean, yeah, a quadricep injury is a major injury.
Yeah, he was out for 8 months.
Matt being the same person, but then he kind of became that really beefed up, huge, muscle-bound, slower wrestler, and he just kind of went, you know, just kind of kept falling back and back and back into not being quite the absolute technician, amazing, perfect sports entertainer wrestler that he was, you know, less than a year or 2 years before that.
Yeah. That's a great match, man. Hey, Mike, tell us your...
I just can't believe that we're allowed to mention Chris Benoit on this podcast.
We are definitely... I want Chris Benoit back in some form or fashion.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's going to be a surprise Rumble entrant anytime soon. But...
the ghost of Benoit?
Yeah.
That is good.
You know, he had that for a little while. He was having matches on TV with guys like Takumi Shinoku and Brooklyn Brawler, and they were these awesome matches.
Can we stop talking about whatever we're going to talk about and just talk about Tasha or just talk about Takumi Shinoku for the rest of the night? Can we do
that? Yes.
I'll go along Tom's lines and go kind of first awesome moment. The first pay-per-view I ever got was WrestleMania 8. I was one of those kids who was like super into wrestling from a really early age, probably 6. I even remember when I was in first grade, I wrote this really dark journal entry and the teacher had to call my mom because that Saturday, I had watched The Undertaker try to murder the Ultimate Warrior on the funeral parlor.
Yes.
I've always been a big wrestling fan. Anyways, so WrestleMania 8, I was a WWF at the time magazine subscriber, and in the lead up to WrestleMania 8, they did this cover story on Ric Flair, and it had all these photos of him with Elizabeth, like they were together before Randy Savage and Elizabeth were together. Ric Flair's feeding her strawberries. They're watching movies together. And I was like, man, that's a bad guy to like be posting those. And so he just had such a pure villain. Especially being like, he was an outsider. He was really good, but he wasn't a world beater. Like, he never had that Triple H killer physique or anything like that. And then Savage was just the best. I mean, he was a total maniac. Everything about him was ridiculous. He had that just absurd voice, and he was such a good worker in the ring. And so they had the championship match, and Flair was threatening that after he beat Savage, he was going to post a centerfold of Liz in the arena, which is, you know, a pretty dick move. And then they went on to have this just awesome match. And it was, when Savage won, I just remember being like, I just felt like all was right with the world. Like, there are certain things that you can't do to somebody.
Yeah.
And it was so great. It was such, like, a pure wrestling moment. Like, they don't really do that as much anymore for good reason, but that was just great stuff. Great stuff. And then, you know, Bobby Heenan was the commentator for the match and was Flair's kind of personal management consultant.
Yeah.
And it was just like, he was just great. Like, he just hated him so much. He loved the bad guys and he loved the good guys.
That's good.
Like, the first time when it was like, I really liked wrestling up to that point, but that was the first time where I, like, kind of got more into what stories were being told by the matches rather than just, you know, these guys are awesome.
Yeah. That's cool. I have to say mine. I guess I have two. One of them is the table ladder chair match with Undertaker and Hardy. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
I do remember that one.
And I remember watching that and just like, wow, Undertaker's really showing that he really can do anything. Because beforehand, he's a great wrestler. He knows what he's doing, but he's never been in like that type of hardcore match where he flings his body everywhere. And for Undertaker to sell that Hardy almost beat him was amazing. It was like one of the most suspenseful matches I've seen. And the other one, which I've talked with Tom and you, Mike, about, was King of the Ring, Kurt Angle versus Shane McMahon.
Yeah.
Because that one, not only was it just, it had a hardcore aspect to it and great actual wrestling and grappling, but it was, I've never seen the crowd go so crazy as to when Kurt Angle, you know, lifted his arm when you thought he was out. You know, oh no, not Kurt, but Shane lifted his arm up after being thrown through the windows and still went on. That match is just amazing to me in every way. And didn't Kurt Angle break his tailbone during that match and he went on to finish that?
Yeah.
So those are I love those matches. But yeah, like you said, there's so many matches we can talk about and storylines. But I'd like to talk about this recent pay-per-view, Royal Rumble, which seemed to have broken the internet and has sent every WWE fan yelling and screaming. So I guess Daniel Bryan is a fan favorite, and he was not in the Royal Rumble this year for some reason unknown.
He's a fan favorite.
and Batista, who hasn't been in wrestling for a while, really, comes back and he wins the Royal Rumble, meaning he's going to have a main event shot at WrestleMania. So my question is this. Do you think that WWE and Vince McMahon, Stephanie, chose Batista to win this because the Marvel Comics movie Guardians of the Galaxy, which Batista stars in, is coming out this year?
I think it's double pronged, or maybe triple pronged, like Satan's fork. That I think partially, yes, it's because obviously he is a movie star, not to the caliber of The Rock, but I mean he's in Riddick and he's in the Man with the Golden or the Iron Fist. He played a golden dude in it, and then he's in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm sure he'll just go back to movies after this. And sure, he might not be the draw The Rock is, but there's obviously, you know, cross tie-in promotion. And if I remember correctly, Guardians of the Galaxy comes out a month after WrestleMania. I think it's like May 14th or something like that.
Correct.
So this gives him, you know, if he wins the belt at WrestleMania, their champion on their program is going to be leading into a hopefully massive movie. And when he goes on shows to do promotion for the Guardians of the Galaxy, he, you know, they're going to bill him as WWE Champion Batista, starring in this, you know, Marvel movie. Because I do think if he ends up in that match, he is going to win the title simply because of marketing. Secondly, there has been at least a slight push on continuity in the last couple of maybe months to a year in WWE writing, where back in the mid-2000s, a.k.a. the dark times, there really wasn't any. So, obviously Orton and Batista have a history. Triple H and Batista have a history. There's lots of rich storylines they can kind of weave.
Yeah, they were. Was it called the corporation that they were in when they first?
They were in Evolution.
Evolution. Yeah, that's right.
But I feel like we've seen every iteration of those guys interacting with each other.
I agree, but at the same time, Batista was kind of on his way out when Orton became like a huge, huge star. Because I mean, he was always WWE champion for a while. Like, but he hasn't been like the star that he is today. And Triple H is effectively retired. Like, he's effectively kind of playing the Ric Flair role now. Plus, he's, you know, he's a legit member of the board of directors. He's a legit, you know, vice president of the company. He has a different kind of relationship, and because, you know, just like he's bringing in the Road Dogg, and he's bringing in Billy Gunn, and he's bringing in Kevin Nash to the Rumble, and now he's bringing back, Batista after how many years of him being out, I think the writers are smart enough to know that there is a storyline window for Batista to be put in that position. It would not surprise me at all if that's one of the other catalysts for CM Punk to start his Triple H feud, is because, hey, yeah, you bring in these, you know, this old tag team, and you're kind of already, oh, hey, Batista's back, let's just put him right in the Rumble, and let's just put him right in all these title matches, just because he's your old buddy from your old your old crew. There's that. And I think, not to really be ignored, the WWE on a certain level loves trolling their audience. Loves it.
But not like this. And I was going to bring up, Mike, do you think...
And I think all three things kind of tie together. Yay, like, yes, people kind of are not going to like it. B, it does make storyline sense. And C, it makes business sense. Because for the casual fan who doesn't watch wrestling but does know who Thor is but doesn't know who Kamala is, they're going to hopefully tune into wrestling to see Drax defend the belt against some guy on TV. And like I said, when he goes to do all his press, which he's going to do press everywhere for this Marvel movie, he might carry the belt on TV with him. And at the very least, at least one of the questions that everyone's going to ask him on every show is, what brought you back to wrestling? Or how does it feel to be WWE champion? Or any number of those things. Like, they're going to drive... Or they're going to connect that thing to his movie career. So I get it on all fronts. I don't have to like it, but I fully understand why those decisions are being made.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
No, I think the reasons for Batista winning the Rumble, I think Tom's spot on. And I think that he's a perfectly credible choice. I don't like him. I'd like to see him lose. But what's interesting is, you know, I feel the same way about Randy Orton. You know, I feel like that both of Triple H's guys heading into WrestleMania, I mean, we kind of saw it at the start of Raw last night, he's sort of making it clear that his guys are Batista and Randy Orton, and that he's kind of, like, that's who he's going to shove in the audience's faces for the next 3 months.
Now, do you think Daniel Bryan was screwed on Sunday?
So here's the thing is that I was angrier on Sunday than I was on Monday. Like, Daniel Bryan got to open the show on Monday, and they sort of tackled it head on. It wasn't like a Dolph Ziggler burial. Where Daniel Bryan comes out and loses in 3 minutes to Damian Sandow, right?
Yeah.
He was a featured guy. But what's crazy is that I've been thinking of Daniel Bryan for the past, 4 months or so as kind of this, like, PG era Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Sure.
He's going against the authority, and everybody is on his side. I mean, he really does get crowd reactions that nobody since the Attitude Era guys has gotten.
You're right. You're completely right.
But what's crazy is, like, you know, It was the 1999 Rumble. They screwed Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, Vince McMahon won the Rumble.
Yeah.
And that was, like, Stone Cold got screwed. But he got screwed over the, like, in the main event of a pay-per-view. Not by not being on it at all. And so, the part that gets me, like, there's wrestling fan mad, which is like, I want to see Daniel Bryan knee somebody in the face. And then there's just like human being mad, which is, I just paid you $55 and Daniel Bryan wasn't in the Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And I'm great. I'm good with the first one, but I'm still kind of mad about the second one.
Yeah. Do you think that if it's possible, since WrestleMania is still a little bit away, do you think that since this backlash of from the fans from Daniel Bryan, do you think that a main event could exist at this WrestleMania, be a triple threat between Orton, Batista, and Daniel Bryan?
I don't think that's going to happen. No.
Yeah, I think that the only acceptable match for Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania this year for me is against The Undertaker.
But which he'll lose, though, because Undertaker always wins WrestleMania.
Maybe.
That doesn't matter so much about winning and losing that match, because I think everyone knows going in you're going to lose that match. But, I mean, it does wonders for lots of reasons. Like, if you're up against Taker, especially in the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years, because let's be honest, I mean, before the streak was like a big, big deal. Like, it's always been kind of a deal, but like back when it was like 10s and 11s and 12s and that kind of stuff, he had matches against Mark Henry, and he had matches against or with Nathan Jones against the A-Train, and they were garbage.
Yeah.
But like, in the last couple years, they have only thrown people at him about who's going to be the superstar to break the streak, and only their top, 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 top tier talent get that spot.
Right.
So if he is in that match and that's what he's going to do, even if he loses, which yeah, he's probably going to lose because the Taker will probably never lose the streak, and if he does lose the streak, it'll be in his retirement match. But this is not going to be it. It still cements him as a top-tier talent. And here's the thing, going back to the Rumble, I was pretty, human being mad when Daniel Bryan wasn't in the Rumble, even though his match was freaking amazing. But here's the thing we all have to realize, just because we read the internet and we know kind of what's going on behind the scenes and we're quote-unquote smart marks, doesn't mean we're not marks. And they are working us for a reason, and those emotions were there for a reason. And Daniel Bryan's tweets later that night saying, sorry guys, the machine doesn't want me there, is just a part of his storyline going forward. And we're going to see a Sheamus heel turn. We're going to see Sheamus cost Daniel Bryan the title at the Elimination Chamber. I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. And we're going to get the Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan feud. We'll get a quote-unquote comeuppance for his 18-second loss a couple of years ago. And that's when a guy is being buried, right? Is when he gets the opening match in WrestleMania and loses in 20 seconds without any bit of offense.
But that ended up being, like, a huge coup for him.
It did. It did, because the audience was so far behind him. But again, like, just because he hasn't been in the title picture, he was in the main feud of Raw for months or weeks with the Wyatt family. Right. He had gauntlet matches that ended Raw on more than one occasion. Like, he was the last person you saw standing at Raw. Even if he's not in the title picture, and that's where we want him to be, because of course we want him to be there, it's not like they're undervaluing Daniel Bryan and putting him, like you said, in 3 or 4 minute squash matches with Dolph Ziggler and just saying, yeah, here's your guy, he's going to go away now. He's obviously a cornerstone of their booking and a cornerstone of their scripting. And yeah, I do think the reactions for him are starting to kind of force their hand a little bit. But if he did win the Rumble, everyone would be really happy about it. But I also feel like, and this might be in their favor, if he had won the Rumble and then also won at Mania, it's very possible that by summer we'd all be over Daniel Bryan because he did what we wanted him to do and he held the belt for a while. So what else is there to cheer for? Where now, because he's being held down by the machine, and I think your Stone Cold Steve Austin comparison is spot on. I think it's perfect. We are going to see a basically year-long or at least summer-long storyline where he gets opportunities, gets screwed out of them, doesn't get them back again, and that's going to be his overarching story until maybe SummerSlam or later when he does win the belt. And because there's going to be so much pent up, this guy should be your title holder, aggression or emotion or whatever you want to say, that when he does get it and carries it for 6 or 7 months, everyone's still going to be behind him because they didn't, quote-unquote, pull the trigger on it too soon. So like I said, I really think WWE does actually know what they're doing, and I think the amazing Raw we saw last night, which is a 180 from the shit Raw we saw 2 weeks ago, gives an idea that they do have a plan, they are going to work it, and the more they can get you to admit, the more they can get you to emote human being madness and not professional wrestling madness, that's the best kind of storytelling. I mean, they're doing exactly what they need to do. So if they got Mick Foley getting on the internet saying, "I'm going to destroy my television," wrestling pissed me off. That is them doing their job to perfection. If they can get real emotion out of you, that's the best storytelling you can possibly tell.
That's true. And so, do you think by saying that, do you both think that WWE has much, much bigger plans for Daniel Bryan in the future?
Yes. There's no doubt. Yes.
So I do. I'm really genuinely nervous about Tom's Sheamus prediction because I'm going to be really mad about a Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus match at WrestleMania. And it sounds totally plausible, and now I'm upset.
Why are you nervous?
Because Sheamus is garbage.
You got to explain that. A lot of people like Sheamus.
I disagree with that on every level other than character, because his character is garbage. He is a fatty child. But when he played like in his wrestling matches, he wrestles the brawler style better than probably most people, period, at least right now. And he does have wrestling chops behind it. Like, go back and watch the Daniel Bryan Sheamus match from, I think, Extreme Rules, the 2 out of 3 falls. Those two guys beat the crap out of each other for 25 minutes, and it was a really good match. But, like, whenever he starts talking, yeah, he is absolutely terrible. And if they change that about his character, which if they turn him heel and make him into the, hey, I'm back, I'm the Celtic Warrior, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, in the chamber, he broke kicks Bryan in the face and makes him lose the belt to Orton, or Orton responds, people will not only hate him more than anyone on the planet, he gets to not be the goofball, I shit in Del Rio's car, the baby face. He gets to be a legitimate, I'm huge, muscular, angry, and I can kick your face off bad guy. Which suits his physique much better than the character he's played the last 2 years.
Mike?
Yeah. My grievances are 90% character based. I don't think that he's quite as good as you do. I think we disagree a little bit on him.
That's fair.
My major grievances are he is, and he's an absolute jerk as a character, but kind of a toothless jerk. There's really not, like, he's not vicious, and he's also not honorable. Like, he's just kind of a punk guy.
Well, and that's and
I wonder as a heel what direction he can go in where there's a little more depth to his character, because if I'm going to need some reason for why he wants to derail Daniel Bryan.
Because he came back after 9 months of not being on TV and not being in the spotlight, and all anyone wants is the guy he beat in 18 seconds. And why are you cheering for the guy that I beat in 18 seconds?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'd take it. But not WrestleMania would be – I'm still holding that hope for that.
Daniel Bryan Undertaker match.
I do hope so too, to a certain extent, because the rumor is Lesnar Undertaker, and that will be horrible just because there is nobody, not even the people who think wrestling is real, that think Taker can beat Lesnar.
Exactly.
Like, that doesn't exist. Like, Lesnar will just pick him up and drop him, and he shatters, and then he pins, like, part of his liver. Like, that's what's going to happen. But,
that really does work pretty well, because the Undertaker really is, like, I would be genuinely concerned for Mark Calloway's safety in an Undertaker Lesnar match. We're like, I'd watch it, but I'd be kind of queasy about the whole thing.
Yeah, because Lesnar could literally break him in half. And that's, like, if this is going to be Taker's retirement match, and he's going to be done, which, you know, there are still rumors that he, you know, he may not even be able to do WrestleMania because of age, or not wanting to, or just he's not in ring shape anymore, or whatever the rumors are. If this is going to be his last match, I'm fine with Brock Lesnar being the guy to break the streak and break The Undertaker. I'm fine with that.
Because it makes sense.
I'm okay with that. Because, yeah, that's what he does. Like, he breaks people. So if that's what happens, a Taker goes away because Brock Lesnar broke him, A, that makes Brock Lesnar look like a freaking $1 million, which he is. He's astounding in the ring. He's still astounding in the ring. And I hope that they are smart enough, and I think they are, hopefully, that by the time summer rolls around, we get a Daniel Bryan, who is WWE champion, versus Brock Lesnar match, because that will be unreal to watch that kind of thing go on, where we all know Daniel Bryan can take it from anybody. He will take punishment left and right and never give up and all that kind of stuff, and then he's even smaller than Punk. He's allegedly weaker than Punk, and all the stuff that they built up for the Lesnar Punk match last year would be that twice fold for Daniel Bryan. Like, you know, I mean, this is like Rey Mysterio versus Brock Lesnar. So I hope that happens, because if you make Brock Lesnar unstoppable and then put him against the person that everyone wants to see win, it's going to be a highly dramatic match, because I don't think anyone going into that match is going to say Daniel Bryan's got this.
So right. do you think since I think The Rock has like 5 movies coming out this year and like 3 the next year, do you think they'll bring The Rock back and do something similar that they did with him and CM Punk with Daniel Bryan?
I don't think so. I think he's done with wrestling after WrestleMania and his little injury and that kind of stuff. I think he is officially done with wrestling, or at least I hope he is, because fuck The Rock.
he's only coming back to face Brock Lesnar and only at a WrestleMania, and I think that even that's kind of unlikely. I think that, you know, Brock Lesnar breaking the streak, the only concern I'd have is we don't really know if Brock Lesnar is going to wake up tomorrow and say, you know what, I'm going to give, you know, UFC another shot, or I'm going to give, you know, competitive lumberjacking a shot. I mean, I think that, you know, the guy is an unbelievable wrestler. He's an unbelievable sports entertainer. He's great. But he clearly doesn't love it in the way that, you know, a guy like Triple H or Daniel Bryan loves it. Which is fine. I don't think that's a bad thing.
That's why I love him so much.
Right. That's the thing, is that he does carry a little bit of that edge where you think, you know, like, let's say that the Big Show were to sort of, you know, let a punch slip and he accidentally connects with Brock Lesnar. Yeah. Brock Lesnar could murder him.
Yeah, he almost murdered the Big Show.
I mean, you have to have kayfabe all the time somewhere, but that's what I love about Brock Lesnar, is like, his character is, I want you to pay me lots of money and I want to hurt people. That's his character. Like, and he carries that over into the programming. Like, you know, Paul Heyman, my client doesn't fight for free, all that kind of stuff. Like, his character is, you will pay me millions of dollars to fight, and I will hurt everybody you put up against me. That is his character. And it's not probably far away from who Brock Lesnar really is, because you hit it on the head. If someone accidentally hurt Brock Lesnar in a match, it wouldn't surprise me if he just, you know, knocked a couple elbows into him and gave him, you know, a permanent scar somewhere, because that's who he is. And that's why I like him so much. I like that he doesn't like wrestling, because he makes everyone else have to step up their game.
Yes.
It's like, oh, you can just sell for me, or you can just do this, or we'll just do this. And Brock Lesnar's like, no, I actually just want to take you and throw you around for half an hour, and then if you're alive at the end of it, great. That's what he wants to do.
Right. Which is why I have to say my favorite Brock Lesnar WrestleMania idea was one that my girlfriend pitched, which is Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton, Beast versus the Beauty.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of the, like, everything that Brock Lesnar has done in this most recent comeback, the I'm back for the WWE Championship comeback, you know, I've got to believe that he's going to be one of the six guys in the Elimination Chamber. And so...
He's not. They actually announced the other two competitors tonight at the SmackDown table.
What?
I'm happy to tell you who they are if this is going to come before Friday and spoil it.
Yeah, definitely. Do it.
I'm jazzed about it, but it's not Brock Lesnar.
Give all contestants.
Okay, all six contestants, from what I understand, I think I had some people tell me who were actually at the taping what was going on, but the six people in the match are obviously Randy Orton, John Cena, Daniel Bryan, Sheamus, Christian, and Antonio Cesaro.
Christian, out of nowhere!
Okay. So... So that leaves pretty much all the interesting characters in WWE except for Daniel Bryan outside of the Elimination Chamber, right? We've got the Wyatts, we've got CM Punk, we've got Brock Lesnar.
CM Punk will probably finish his feud with Kane.
Right.
Still, then the Shield and the Wyatts actually also did get announced at SmackDown, that the Shield and the Wyatts are officially in a tag match at that event. So they're going against each other.
Against each other?
Yes.
Oh, boy. That's exciting.
Yes, it is. And I love Cesaro. I could watch Cesaro wrestle all day, every day. I'm stoked that he is in a match with as high-quality people. I like Christian a lot. I think he's really good. He doesn't need to be in that match. He really doesn't.
Yeah, but everybody wants to see Edge and Christian again. And that was what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Christian's a phenomenal... in-ring technician.
Yep.
I think that they have sort of given up on the Christian character.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really all that excited. I think Cesaro's great. And I would love to see him in an actual storyline leading into a major pay-per-view. Because he really is. I thought that his initial character before he got put with the Real Americans was pretty strong.
He was, and he had a bad run before he got thrown back into there. But he's been on a friggin' roll the last couple of months. Especially if you watch NXT, he is killing it on NXT. He's killing it.
Yeah, he's their go-to guy for really good matches with their developmental guys.
Yeah, he's killing it, and he can really, he can go with anybody. And I really think with this Raw, with this Monday on Raw, like you saw Zeb Coulter kind of, you know, smack Jack Swagger, and I think Swagger and Cesaro will eventually pull apart from Zeb, and they've got the little cool handshake thing they do now, where they slap hands and like kiss their arms and do cool stuff. And I think that means they're going to go face, and it wouldn't surprise me if we have a face Antonio Cesaro in the near future, who, again, just like people mark out when Daniel Bryan kicks people in the face, people were going to mark out in 3 or 4 months or 6 months when Antonio Cesaro has Randy Orton by the leg to just swing him around the ring.
Yeah. Yeah. Very exciting. And so, do we get to see a Brock Lesnar-Batista match at Elimination Chamber?
I bet, and I don't know, this is totally my speculation, that there's potentially, because there is such a negative reaction to Batista right now, I mean, even last night on Monday when he came out, like, he got a pop when his music hit, but then when he hit the ring, everyone's like, yeah, we don't really care about you. That there is a possibility that we will see a Batista versus Brock Lesnar match to determine who the number one contender actually is. And who knows if Brock Lesnar will beat him and then go on to face Randy Orton or whoever's at WrestleMania. Who knows? I don't know. But that could be a potential match for the chamber is Batista versus Brock, or they'll make it Batista versus Del Rio because they had that stupid Twitter feud for whatever, and they'll just get that out of the way. And who knows what Brock will do? Maybe Brock, and this could be a thing, because there's no DQ. It wouldn't surprise me at all if during the chamber match, Brock just like literally ripped the door off the handle and just F5'd everybody in the ring and then left.
F5s for everyone.
That could happen as well. Is he might not have a match, and he'll just show up and just brain everybody in that match who's still standing.
Now, if it is Batista and Orton at WrestleMania for sure, do you think Triple H will do something to interfere?
I don't, but I do think that shortly after WrestleMania, and probably shortly after Guardians of the Galaxy is out, that Batista will align himself fully with asshole Triple H, and he will be a bad guy for at least a couple months.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably, when it comes down to it, I mean, I think he's already kind of that bad guy. You know, I think that he really embraced being disliked sort of in the aftermath of the Rumble, and Triple H has gone out of his way to be supportive of him. And, yeah. You know, it's a minor thing, but it ends up being a big deal. He dresses like an asshole.
Yeah, he does.
Like, you can't cheer a guy who's dressed like that. And I think that is a really conscious decision. Like, it's not like badass leather jacket and, you know, and torn jeans like Triple H came back with when he was a face. Like, it's clearly designed to elicit a negative reaction. So yeah. We're kind of seeing heel Batista.
Yeah, it's pretty much like he shops exclusively at a store called Street Douche.
There's so much possibility for this WrestleMania. I just hope they don't drop the ball or jump the shark with it, because they haven't really yet, but it's very possible. They're on the edge, I think.
I told some of my friends this before, like after the Rumble, and even kind of before the Rumble, because I kind of had in the pit of my stomach, I'm like, Daniel Bryan's not going to be in it. They're not going to put him in it. He's not advertised for it. They're not acting like he's advertised for it. Maybe he'll be a surprise entrant, and I would love that if he was, but if he's not, it's probably not going to happen. They're probably not going to do it. So I had told people, you know, that it's very possible I would just stop watching wrestling until WrestleMania, because I'm never going to skip a WrestleMania, that if this just kept going the way it was and they just keep ignoring all of this, I just may take a 2-month hiatus and say, listen, you just do whatever you want with the storylines. I don't care. I'll catch you in April and we'll see where the new storylines go. But this 2 months, I'll just take a bye and just skip it. But this Raw really did put it back into a place where I do think they actually have, more or less, with the exception of like Taker and the exception of like Hogan and like what are they going to do with him because he's back and all that kind of stuff. Like, except with those little tweaks that they haven't figured out yet, the main storylines, I do honestly believe they have everything from right now through WrestleMania for Daniel Bryan, Cena, the Wyatts, the Shield. I think all of them, they have all those storylines done, and they're just going to build it piece by piece until April, and I'm okay with it. The way they ended Raw and the way that whole thing went, does make me believe they do have a storyline idea, and I don't think it's going to involve Daniel Bryan winning or being WWE champion, at least till summer. But I do think they have their ducks in a row, and I do think the Royal Rumble was the start of them basically really pulling the trigger on the Daniel Bryan storyline, because him not being in there, like, you know, we all said, made so many people actually legitimately angry, not like, oh, it sucks that they used a chair and beat this guy, you know, unfairly. Like, people were legit pissed that that happened. So they're taking that energy and turning it into something good. And I do think they have the whole storyline plotted out. I hope they do.
I hope so, too.
It's very compelling TV right now. Like, I loved watching Raw and watching their big stars come out, like Orton and Batista and all that kind of stuff, and have everyone chanting Daniel Bryan over whatever they said.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy.
That is pretty awesome. I'm gonna ask you, too, since this has happened, I know a couple of us have read rumors that Kurt Angle wants to come back to the WWE and Sting wants to come back to the WWE. Do you think that will happen and that will affect any of these storylines?
I don't think that we're going to see anything out of Sting or Kurt Angle in the lead up to WrestleMania. Well, I mean, if my thought was that the Kurt Angle rumors were sort of more for a later in the year return.
Okay.
But if Kurt Angle's available, they'll find a way to get him into something interesting as soon as possible. I think that Sting, you know, he's really going to be very much a special attraction, right? I mean, I don't think we're going to see Sting wrestling on Raw ever. I think that we'll see him in some kind of pay-per-view match at some point. And I just don't... you know, there was that... The match... I think it was 2011. I think it was in the lead-up to WrestleMania 27. Where it really looked like The Undertaker and Sting were going to face off at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then at the last minute, Sting kind of went back to TNA and he ended up wrestling Triple H.
Yeah.
That, I think, was kind of our last opportunity for Sting to make a major impact in the WWE. The Undertaker's the only opponent who I kind of want to see him face. And I want to see him face The Undertaker 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and I agree with everything he just said, that I do think those two will make WWE returns, and I think we'll see Sting before we see Kurt Angle. But I don't think either of them will play a role at all in the build-up to WrestleMania at all. Now, maybe we'll see Sting at WrestleMania. Like, maybe that'll be his debut, and maybe he will, I don't want to say interfere in the Undertaker's match, but maybe he might appear after it, or, you know, come down from the rafters after it or something like that. And that might set up a Taker Sting feud for Extreme Rules or something like that, just to have that match but not have to rush it for WrestleMania. Because I don't think Sting Taker is a good match for Mania, because as much as everyone loves Sting, again, at this stage of the game, it's 21-0 at this point.
Right.
That you need someone who people think has a chance to beat him. And everyone knows Sting is older than he is. He's not a big name anymore. I mean, he's been on TNA for how long? Like, people know who Sting is, but he's not a WrestleMania caliber opponent for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
This year. I agree that maybe 2 or 3 years ago, yeah, maybe that could have been a good match. So I think maybe he'll appear at WrestleMania, because it seems as though the ink is already dried on their contract. Just matters on how many dates he wants to work and that kind of stuff. But I can see there being a Taker Sting match down the road in the future. But I would say that his involvement in WrestleMania, if at all, will basically just be an appearance to set something up down the line. And I think Kurt Angle will maybe come back this year, but probably not until Survivor Series or later on in the year, even than that. I don't think he's in a big rush to get back, but I hope when he does come back, he's got at least, you know, a solid year's worth of being a quote-unquote full-time worker. Like, maybe not work house shows, but at least be a pretty full-time worker, because he does need to spend his last good solid year of being a professional wrestler in WWE. Like, he just has to. He cannot retire at TNA. That would be a waste of him, like it has been for the past 7 years.
I agree.
And I'll have to wear elastic waist pants when he goes up one-on-one with Daniel Bryan.
Me too, man. Me too. I can't imagine seeing Daniel Bryan Kurt Angle face off. That might be the best match.
There was that awesome finish to Raw in the lead up to TLC where Shawn Michaels super kicked CM Punk, and there was and then I guess even going back to that, you know, Daniel Bryan and Shawn Michaels had that kind of face off where he put him in the Yes Lock. And if we can't get a Daniel Bryan Shawn Michaels match, which I don't think we're going to get, Bryan Kurt Angle is really it's really, really close.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that match will certainly happen at some point. And like I said, I mean, I hope he comes back this year, because I think if he waits too long and waits another 2 or 3 years to come back, which I don't think is the case, he's just not going to be in any shape to do anything. I mean, he's always going to be a world-class athlete, but to a certain, you know, at a certain point, he's just not going to be able to compete at the level he needs to compete in those matches. And, you know, I just hope for a good send-off for him. And it's still a crime that there isn't a Kurt Angle DVD or Blu-ray on the market, because he had some of the best matches against anybody always in his run in WWE. Now, unfortunately, a lot of his best ones were against, you know, Chris Benoit, which I'm pretty positive they're never going to release on home video. But I mean, some of those matches, like that Royal Rumble Championship match, is off the chain, unbelievable. And they had a great Iron Man submission match at a Backlash or something like that. In the early 2000s, that was off the chain, unbelievable. And they've had so many good pairings that it's kind of a shame that you will never get to really see those on a WWE DVD anymore.
Well, I did. So certainly not on a compilation, right? I mean, although I think with the network, we're probably not going to see as many DVD. Well, maybe we will. I don't know, but. I read something that WWE is going to show Chris Benoit matches on the network, that they won't edit out his appearances at pay-per-views.
Yeah, why would they, though?
But that they're going to have some kind of disclaimer before the event. And I just would love to know. I'd love to have the job of, like, drafting the Chris Benoit disclaimer. It's like, what could you possibly say? Like, what do you have to say there?
I mean,
to separate WrestleMania 20's main event and double murder suicide.
Well, I mean, that was like his personal life. I mean, I think his career as far as wrestling stands on its own. I don't know. I mean,
well,
yeah.
That's the thing. It doesn't stand on its own. Like, you can't look at someone's accomplishments as good as they are. He's probably one of the best of all time. But there's no way to separate I murdered my wife and kid from I am a great professional wrestler. Like, there's one thing to separate Kanye West as a giant douche and also the greatest producer on the planet. You can separate those two things, but you can't separate I willingly murdered my family and also I put on great wrestling matches.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, like, I mean, he was such a big part of WWE history. It'd be kind of ridiculous not to not air him, you know? They need to.
Yeah, I think that they do have to. I think that up to this point, they've done it as well as you possibly could.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you have to, like, if you go to their title histories, they acknowledge that Chris Benoit once won the world title, but you can't click to get more detail. You know, I think that things like that, they acknowledge that, you know, the number one entrant in the Royal Rumble has won
twice,
twice, whatever, you know, and that includes Benoit, but they never mention Benoit. I think that's the best way to do it. But if you're going to put your entire archive up for sale, or, you know, at least for viewing, I think that the logical step is to somehow do it, but do it by attracting as little attention to it as possible. You know, I don't think we're ever going to see the Chris Benoit Hard Knocks DVD that's which is a shame, because there's some great stuff on there.
Yeah, but and
there's a really good reason why not. And,
yeah, this is what I meant about that retrospective thing, because there is a big difference between presenting a pay-per-view in its entirety, because you can't just cut that match out, it's part of the pay-per-view. There's a difference between saying, listen, here is every Royal Rumble, which the Royal Rumble, I think, collection came out after his death, and they definitely have his match in the set, because they have the whole pay-per-view. But and since the network is just doing, here's complete pay-per-views from our entire history, basically, they're going to have matches with him in them. But when you are cherry-picking matches for a retrospective documentary, like a Shawn Michaels DVD or something like that, you can cherry-pick, like, even if they're good matches, you're going to try to avoid picking matches with someone who's a murderer. You're just going to do it. Because, I have the choice of showing you what's on here, where if just as an archival thing, I have to show you the complete unedited pay-per-view, because that's how it was in real life. But if I'm going to be, you know, just showing you, hey, here's the best of this guy's matches or the best of this year, I'm going to skip over the parts where it might be uncomfortable to watch someone who ended up killing people.
Yeah. Yep. To sort of wrap this whole awesome podcast up, what do you each of you want to see at WrestleMania in April play out, and what will be good for the network and WWE company?
I would like to see the continued emphasis on building up Daniel Bryan as the ultimate title chaser and the ultimate, I guess, I don't want to say anti-authority, because he's not anti-authority. He's just anti-unfairness, I guess. So, like, I hope they continue building his storyline up, and even if he doesn't win the championship for a couple more months or even until the end of the year, that's fine, as long as they keep him at the forefront of feuding with people who can get him into the title picture, or dealing with setbacks that happen because of him trying to get into the title picture. I think as long as that happens, that's really all I want to see. I'd like to see a really good CM Punk match, because I do not think CM Punk is long for the wrestling world. I think we might see his departure this year, and I would be amazed if he's still wrestling by next year. I'd be amazed if he's a full-time wrestler by the end of 2015. So I'm hoping he can kind of get out of his rut he's been in recently, and just, you know, being wrestling Ryback and Curtis Axel for nonstop, and now he's wrestling Kane and wrestling the New Age Outlaws, and just stuff that's not fun for someone of his caliber to do. I'm hoping that his send-off, or whatever he decides to get out of here, he does it on a high note with a great personality, great promos, great matches against people who can actually work, and I'd like to see him go out of the company on his own terms, having a good last year or two, where I really think his return for Payback On has pretty been kind of lackluster for CM Punk. So really, other than that, I think a good send-off for Punk, or at least a push in the right direction where he actually has a core storyline to latch onto and be in, and the continued building up of Daniel Bryan as the eventual face of the company, because eventually he will get there. Eventually he will be the guy you see on all the cups, and the guy you see on all the programs, and the cover of WWE 15. Like, he will be eventually that guy. And just hope they keep building that storyline up until it gets to such a breaking point that the internet and the casual fans and the hardcore fans and the smart marks and all that kind of stuff are all feeling the same thing, which has not happened since probably 1998. You haven't captured that amount of wide-ranging emotion from people who think they know what's going on and people who do know what's going on and people who don't care what's going on. All of them want the same thing, which never happens. So this is the perfect time for them to have a re-catalyst of making wrestling as important to society as a whole as it was in 1998 and kind of in the late or mid-80s. If they can turn that and make wrestling into something that people love and not just, you know, losers like me who have been watching it for however long when it sucks, if they can capture an audience of that again, this WrestleMania is going to go a long way to making wrestling part of the, I guess, the cultural fabric again of the way it was in the late 90s. So that's what I'm hoping for. Who knows if it'll happen? But really, I don't care about any specific matches to happen. I just want the storylines to make sense, and I want the storylines to have the continuity to push out to the rest of the year and tell me a good story for once, because they have one right now. They have a great story on their hands. They cannot screw it up.
Sweet. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, Tom's WrestleMania sounds great. I think that CM Punk's been kind of the, for the past year, he's kind of been in that like Don Draper post-divorce. Like, he's not quite as good at work. He's not quite as good as a character. I really want to see him in, and I'm certain he's going to face Triple H, and I really want to see him lock in the months leading up to WrestleMania. That'd be a big deal for me. Even if it's not, you know, even if it's going to be, you know, a couple matches down on the card, but I still think it's going to be great. And I think that the three characters that I'm really interested in sort of going into and coming out of WrestleMania are Brock Lesnar, because I think he could go a bunch of different ways. Bray Wyatt, because I think that he's had such an awesome first year in the WWE, and I think that, you know, he seems to be headed towards a match with Cena. You know, I'm kind of thinking maybe Hulk Hogan's in Cena's corner for that one, but even regardless of the specifics of it, I think that Bray Wyatt is going to do something really interesting in the lead up to WrestleMania, and I hope he gets to do something really interesting at WrestleMania. And then the other character is the Shield.
Yep.
You know, I don't know what's going to happen to those three guys once they aren't the Shield anymore, but I think that all three of them could be world champions at some point. It won't happen just because, you know, somebody has to lose in a three-person sort of, you know, breakup. But they're all really good, and they're all good for different reasons. And so I really want to see what happens to them over the next few months. And then, again, like when they have their sort of WrestleMania moment, what happens. I'm really interested to see that. And, you know, it's this WrestleMania is so much more exciting than from 3 months out, is so much more exciting than so many of the previous ones, because it's going to the WWE the night after WrestleMania is going to look really different from how it looks right now. And so I'm excited for that.
With the network coming available soon and how that's all going to be with WrestleMania, how that's going to work. It's exciting times.
Yeah. This was really fun. I really enjoyed myself.
Good. I was hoping that we can all do this, like in a couple weeks, do this again.
I'm okay with that.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that is our WWE podcast leading up to WrestleMania. There will be more. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Brian Kluger. I'm with Tom Nix and Mike Pertill.
Thanks, guys.